Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators, and we've been working for a combined 50 years of experience, and we...
100 years we've been working.
We've got a century of education.
We've got 50 books between us. That's what it is. 50 published children's books. And we've all taught illustration at the university level. So take that to the bank.
Boom. Each week we're going to give you guys a different topic on illustration. Sometimes we're going to agree and sometimes we're going to argue, but each time you're going to learn something new, we hope.
We do hope. Nice to have everybody here listening. I don't know where I'm going with that.
Let's talk about who brought, how is this podcast happening? Is there anybody responsible for it? Any company you might know of?
That's right. Okay. So this podcast, I don't know if you guys know this listening out there in podcast land, but this podcast is solely like exists because of svslearn.com. They are paying for the editor. They're paying for our time to do this podcast. And
we really love those guys over there at SVS.
We really love those guys over at svslearn.com. What is svslearn.com? It is, if you want to become a children's book illustrator, like this is the place you got to go to learn how to learn this craft, to master it, to get the fundamentals to do it. Basically, from picking up Photoshop for the first time, because there's courses on how to do that, to like advanced book cover design. There's courses on that and everything in between. Over 80 courses. I don't know how many hours of instruction, but check it out. And it's all available to you for 7 days for free right now. We're running a thing at svslearn.com where you can sign up for 7 days, try it out, see if you like it. And if you do like it, you don't have to do anything. You just are subscribed and you can do these courses.
I should have, let me take the reins for a second, Jim.
Thank you.
I just wanted to announce that SVS is offering some interactive classes, and the next term starts in the beginning of May. Hopefully this podcast is out by then, and you guys can sign up, but we are doing trimesters, and there's a schedule that's there, and you can sign up for these different classes and work one-on-one with either Jake or Will or me or a host of other teachers. And those classes are typically anywhere from 5 to 10 weeks.
Yeah. One in particular we want to talk about is Sean's dinosaur one, right? Is that the one?
I have a really great teacher. Yeah. He's amazing at rendering dinosaurs. He came up with this whole book that is kind of a Western, spaghetti Western kind of theme with a dinosaur slant. So all the cowboys riding dinosaurs. It's awesome. He did a whole book on it. And I thought, man, these things are so cool. I just want to see him, you know, do a tutorial. So he made a tutorial for us. He did a couple of different demos with a full city and stuff. And it's just amazing. And yeah, we thought it would be cool to do an interactive class. So he's teaching one.
I'll say that we're probably going to laugh more now that we're recording for the video, because before I couldn't see you guys.
It's true.
And I got a partition between me and Jake. And now when you start to screw up, I can see your facial expression.
Yeah, it's different.
It's funnier.
The thing is, though, I can't hide behind all of this. Like, I play with stuff all the time during the podcast. And now, like, I'm recording from my son's room now. And he's got all these cool little things, like
for some reason,
like regular scissors. When I'm holding regular scissors, it just makes me think these are sharp. Don't run with them. Maybe that comes from, you know, years of parents saying don't run with the scissors. But whenever I hold kid scissors, I just want to make stuff. I don't know why. It just makes me want to cut construction paper. This cool thing too. Check this out.
Lee's gonna be finger painting. Holy cow, that's cool. He's got this pen, like this pen holder that could also double as a hat.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
All right. So you guys can't see in the podcast, but we are recording this for video. So if you guys want to
for YouTube,
look at our ugly face,
you can
see.
And you know what? Maybe we should ask people if they want to let us know if they consume video on Periscope or Twitch, because we've been thinking about possibly uploading there as well.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen for another 3 to 6 months.
Okay.
Probably,
we could still find out.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. We'll find out.
Let's get into the topic. People are turning off. I can hear it.
No, these... come back. Wait.
It's taking us longer and longer to get to our topic.
All right. Here we go. Our topic today is all on Lee. He's the one that wanted to do this topic. We're just going along with it. No. Lee, you want to tell us what we're going to talk about? We're going to dive into today.
I do. Yep. Today's is going to be on work life balance. We've been getting a lot of requests for this topic, and we had done one. There's been different versions of this podcast before. It used to be a webinar, and I think we did a work life balance. But there's a lot of different angles. Kind of want to go through and modifications from what we talked about back then. So let's. I want to just get dive into it. I know everybody's concerned with it. It's something that affects you each day, and so there's a couple different angles we're going to hit this from. And I guess let's just go ahead and dive right in. The first topic. Go ahead, Jake.
Before you dive into it, I just want to. I want to state, like, what is the problem here? Like, are you seeing people who are just so focused on work that they've neglected any sort of personal life? Or are you seeing people who are like, how do I have time to work on my portfolio when I've got, you know, this show to catch up on? I've got these family things, obligations I've got to do. I've got a day job. I've got this, I've got that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all of the above. And so I wanted to hit that in a little bit more of a balanced kind of way. The version that I was going to do of this podcast, which I told Will and Jake yesterday, was going to be just focusing on, okay, so you've achieved work-life balance, and what do we do with that time? And so Jake, Will, and I all have these extracurricular activities and things that we focus on. We were going to talk mainly about that. But after just thinking it over in my head, I do want to go into, before we get into all that stuff, how just the basics of establishing work-life balance, because I think that's going to be the most beneficial to the audience and to the listeners, and steps that we've gone through and different phases of our career that we've gone to achieve what I would consider a decent work-life balance. Do you guys feel like you have work-life balance?
I do.
I know Will does.
In fact, Jake calls me Mr. Work-Life Balance around here.
I don't know. I think Will's life side of that equation is getting more than work.
No, he works hard. We were joking the other day because we had been talking about this, and Will was at the office on a Saturday, and we were texting on a Saturday, and Lee's like, "What are you doing at the office? Weekends are for, you know, playing or whatever."
That's right.
And I'm like, Will checks out every day at 2 or 3. So he has to work on the weekends.
That's right.
He's not getting anything done during the week. Meanwhile, I was texting that from the movie that I was watching. What was it? Captain Marvel.
Nice. Do you guys think that it's, as I was going through the different phases of my career and transitioning from a student, do you guys think that having a work-life balance is possible at all times? My answer to that was no. That so there's some phases, and I guess you got to just figure out which phase you're in. Some phases are not going to have work-life balance. I remember when I was in school at Art Center, it was a disaster. I mean, I had no work-life balance. It was boot camp, right, in every sense of the word, and I was doing art from the second I got up to the second I went to sleep. I didn't have good working methods back then either. So maybe I could have attained a little bit better, but everything was thrown off. And then there's been other phases of my life where the balance was very skewed, like when we had a new baby, different phases. Do you guys agree with that? That it work-life balance is tough to just maintain as a normal, that you go through these rhythms?
Yeah. I could tell you wanted to say something, Jake. Now I can tell when I beat you to it. I totally agree. I think there are times for more work-life balance. And I mean, when we're talking about life, we're talking about things other than work, right? Talking about exercise or
everything, whatever
recreation,
it is,
yeah. Game playing, time with your family, time with your significant other.
Yeah.
Or time doing nothing, if nothing is your thing. And the thing that I think that I see as the biggest problem with young people today, here we go picking on young people again.
Those young
I was actually having this discussion with my son, because my youngest son is struggling with this right now. And I said, when I was young, I was in Boy Scouts, and I had the opportunity to do a couple of really hard things then, and then that transferred into things later. So one, I did this competition with an axe that took all day. My hands got bloody from trying to cut these trees and quarter wood. And I was able to draw on that. I mean, my hands were really bleeding at the end of this thing. And I was able to leverage that hardship into, well, if I could do that, I could do this. So then I stepped up to doing harder projects, and without going through my whole life history, it culminated in climbing a mountain in the wintertime, which started at 5 a.m. and we didn't get to camp until about 5 or 6 at night after dark. And I still think that's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life in a single day. And when you do something like that, when you push your body and you push yourself beyond what you're capable of, you're able to then take, anytime someone asks you to do something hard, or anytime there's an opportunity to do something hard in the future, you go, well, in your mind, I did that, so this is easy. And I see in my son, and in a lot of my students that I've had, I don't think they've ever had those experiences to build on. So the things that seem easy to us seem impossible to them. And unless you can train your brain that was hard, but this is easier than that, and so I can just do it and buckle down. I see kids that don't, they've never, and let me preface it with this. I still feel like, compared to the hard work that people have done on this planet, I've never put in a hard day's work in my life. If you look at history of what people have gone through.
Yeah, it's true.
I could give examples of that, but I'm not going to. But I've never worked a day in my life. But I see kids today who have really never worked a day in their life.
Right. So they're skewed to, to put this in a concrete kind of example, I was given a lecture the other day in my painting class that was, some people were doing these master copies, and they were like, wow, this took a lot longer than I thought. And I was like, oh, really? What does that mean? And they said, some people spent 6 hours on it, some people spent 8 hours on it. And I was like, man, that is just the start. Like when I was learning to paint, I after doing enough of them, 12 hours became sort of my average. Some paintings were harder and took longer. Some of them were a little faster, but 12 hours, to get, and it was all traditional paint too. So you had all that stuff, the gesso in the board and all that stuff. But 12 hours was my kind of norm. And if I finished one earlier than that, I was like, cool. If I finished in 10, I'd be like, that was awesome. But now, because we have, I think, lean towards that instant gratification kind of thing, that 5 hours seems like a long time. And I had this whole lecture, change what you think is a normal time frame, and that will be an easiest way to adjust your mindset to thinking, because once you start thinking, oh my God, this is taking forever, man, the whole motivation changes. Everything changes.
Yep.
Jake, go ahead. I know you're holding your tongue. You got some wisdom.
I was thinking, it's not a balance. It's more like an ebb and flow, I think, because there's times that you have to put everything into work, times of life and times of the year, I would say.
Right.
Or the project.
And so at those points, your life becomes your work. And then there's other times where life needs to sort of focus more on your family or on friendships, things like that. And so it's okay to, it's okay to pull back on work a little bit to live your life, to focus on family, especially if you just had a baby or you just got married. Or
you're going to move like Jake's getting ready to do. And I just did this past year. I mean, your whole life will be thrown from these things.
Right. Or a death in the family too. Like my mom died last week and I'm taking time off this next week. And I've really dialed back on the work that I've been doing just to kind of reflect and think and plan stuff to do with the family and things like that. So there's those things. And then I think there's also, I think, though, there's a way for you to have this sort of ebb and flow day to day as well. And the main rule that I've been trying so hard to work on these past few years is to be present wherever I'm at or in whatever I'm doing. So if I'm at work, I am 100% doing work. If I'm at home, I'm 100% doing home, you know, family stuff. If I am playing, I'm 100% playing. And I'm not trying to answer emails while I'm like, you know, running or biking or whatever. And when I'm with the family, I'm trying to stay off my phone, you know, trying to not to check things. And when I'm at work, I'm trying not to, you know, play. I'm trying to get some work done.
That's a great point. I do have a little list of things I'm going to give later that things that'll help achieve a work-life balance, but I want to highlight that because Jake's kind of leading right into it. And that is,
before you do,
go ahead.
I just want to say, like, you kind of snuck that in there about your mom dying. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say that it was really nice for me to watch you go through that. Not nice in a, I'm glad that you went through that, but just, it was nice to be able to share that personal side. Because we all go through those things and, you know, and in fact, all three of us are kind of going through parents that are having problems right now. And, but that's another facet of life that is so important. And to see you, the way you've handled it is, it's been really neat.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And I mean, there's been several days where I've been super down and super bummed, especially when she was towards the end before she died. She was really not doing good. She had lung cancer, and the lung cancer was spreading. And I flew down to Arizona to spend some time with her earlier in the month. And as soon as I got back, you know, it looked like, hey, she could rally and she could do better and she could, you know, be with us for another 6 months or a year, or, you know, if her trajectory stayed the same, it could go, you know, down fast. And as soon as I left, she started degrading daily. And the next week I had to go to Emerald City. And the day before Emerald City, I was like, this is dumb. I don't want to. Emerald City's a Comic-Con. I should mention it's a convention in Seattle. I was just like, this is dumb. Like, I should probably go down to Arizona. I should, at least I should just be super available. And I talked to my sister about it, and she's like, you know what? Do what you have got planned to do. And if any sort of emergency happens, or if mom, you know, says, where's Jake? Get him here. Like, we'll just get you down here. We'll fly you down. We'll work it out. And I was like, you're right. And that led me into thinking, my mom wouldn't want me to, she was the type of person where she didn't want to like cause too many waves or cause me to neglect my family or to neglect my work, because of her. And she always knew that like I had to provide for a family, and I had a family that, you know, needed a father and a wife that needed a husband. And so she sort of wanted to like, she was really cool about stepping back and letting me do those things. And I felt like at this period too, like I had that last moment with her. I had that last visit with her where I, you know, could help take care of her and could spend some time with her and talk to her and, you know, just hold her hand. And that was a really good last moment. And then I was able to shift into, now I've got to do the things that I've committed to and not let other people down and not let my family down and do what I need to provide for them. And I think that, you know, that's sort of the way that I do my work-life balance. There's these compartments and I stick the things into them. And when I'm in that compartment, I am in that compartment. I'm not like straddling two compartments at the same time. So I was able to go to Emerald City and, you know, there was this undercurrent of worrying about my mom and thinking about my mom, but I tried to not let that get in the way of me doing a good job there. And then when I came back, I had work to do here. And it's like trying not to let that interfere. And then when I am at home and when I'm, it's time to think about it and to worry about it, I'm all in. I'm 100% in, and I'm, you know, talking to my sisters and figuring those things out and working on it. So,
man, rough thing to go through. I'll add to that too, because it's an important point you're bringing up, is two things. Where I was going to go with kind of one of the tips is that I have written down is work with intensity. And that is something that I think a lot of us can do if we think about it. Like what Jake's saying is a very conscious choice. Like, I'm here and I'm working and I'm going to work and I'm not going to mess around. That's why Jake always turns off every time me and Will are talking. He's there to work. But it's an important thing to think about. And to apply that to all areas of your life. And, you know, going back to, you know, part of the reason that we're having this episode is balancing out your life. There's the work side of everything, but then there's these personal things that, and somehow art in particular is kind of an overwhelming thing to learn. There's this undercurrent, and I don't know if you guys feel this, maybe it's because I went to art center, but you should just be working all the time. That's kind of the gist that how people talk about illustration, a job as an illustrator. I'm busy. You ask somebody, hey, how you doing? Well, I'm busy. And it's just kind of weird. And I'll share a personal moment, that kind of ties onto what Jake's talking about. When I was in my early, 20s, my dad got cancer, and it was kind of out of the blue. And I was living in California. He's living in Nashville. And, I'd never had anybody die. I'd never had anybody get sick. Now my family's pretty healthy overall. And he was young, 54 years old. And, and so, you know, it was time to for me to probably come home and check on that. But, I was talking to him on the phone too, and he was, you know, maintaining a kind of chipper attitude. And so I have all these friends in Nashville. I grew up here and friends around the South. And so I tried to coordinate with everybody's going to different colleges and jobs and stuff. And I tried to coordinate this trip that I was going to come back and see my dad. I wanted to see all my friends too. So I'm waiting like, oh, you know, this friend's coming in 2 weeks. I'll schedule it then. You know, I tried to get the biggest bang for my buck. And my dad died while I was en route to Nashville. And if there was, I mean, this is the one regret of my whole entire life. If I could change that plane flight, I just didn't appreciate how valuable and how short all this stuff is.
How old were you?
I was in my early 20s. Yeah. And he was 54. I had never had anybody die like that. And so I just didn't even think that was a reality, even though I know that cancer is a big thing. I just thought, you know, you just go through it and you go to chemo and, you know, you just kind of play a best case scenario. And then when I got off the plane and he's gone, I never saw him again. And he never got to meet my son. And like, so now all that stuff is tied together. You know, I just went on a vacation this past week with my son for 3 days. We pulled him out of school just to go have fun with him. He's 8 years old. He's right in the pocket of just being, you know, really fun to hang out with. And I just want to appreciate that while it's here, because it's, you guys know, Will has adult children. It goes by quick, right?
Yeah, really quick. Mm-hmm. In fact, to tag along with that, what I hear you guys saying is that the time that you spend on work is really important and kind of sacred. And it made me think of, I know there have been some really focused people in history that are famous for certain things. Like, you know, you take Nikola Tesla, and I believe he was one of those guys who bought the same clothes so he didn't have to waste any time,
wow,
you know, choosing what to wear. Or
that was Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs, yeah, too.
True.
But no, I've always wanted to have to get to a point where I felt like time is short and the time that I spend is really important on things. And I find that as artists and all of you listening, like we have that ability because we have passion behind the thing that we're creating. Whereas if you go and punch a clock, it's really like you're selling your life, right? I'm selling this 8-hour block today of my life to this company. But when you're creating your own art and you're making discoveries and you're improving and you're getting better, every month and every year, it's almost like your own little alchemy or your own little invention that you're working on, right? Your art style is your own invention, and that should become your video game, you know, don't you think? I mean, like, mm-hmm. I'm not saying, I know I'm the guy that picks on video games a lot, but, and that's from experience of trading that time, which is good to kind of blow off time sometimes, but you know, so many people get so addicted to games that the game, they end up scheduling game time as such an important thing that nothing in the world is going to ever interfere with game time. And it's like, there are times where your work as an artist needs to interfere with your pleasure time.
What game were you
StarCraft
really into? StarCraft. Yeah. That's an addictive game.
Yeah. And so, but yeah, I think that, it's, you need to look at, and here's the thing, you, as a student, I never felt like this. I never felt, or rarely felt like working all day on art, but the better you get, the more fun it becomes, because then you're able to realize the dreams that you have. And all of a sudden they're starting to, the work you put down on paper is starting to mimic the vision that you had. Whereas in the beginning, you never live up to the vision. You have these amazing right. visions and you never live up to them, but it gets more fun when you're able to visualize something and then create it. And then it becomes, I mean, it's like you just think of something and there it is.
Yeah. I think that's an important part of work-life balance too, is that what you're saying is you don't struggle with the technique anymore. It's just the vision of what you're trying to say. And I totally agree that like struggling with technique doubles your time on any individual piece. And then you multiply that by every piece you're doing. It's rough in the beginning because you, like you said, you had this vision and all of a sudden your painting looks chalky or there's the perspective's wrong or some other thing. And that just takes such a dominating amount of time to figure that out. But once that goes away, it's like the keys to the kingdom. I mean, you're off to the races really quick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think if I were to look at like my life so far, and I'm in my early 40s now, my teens were very much about having experiences and also drawing. And then my 20s, I got married, I had kids, and I really wanted to perfect my craft, master the craft that I was like learning all the fundamentals about growing up until my 20s, right? And so my 20s were like family, work, family, work, and not much else. Not much time for friends, not much time for taking care of my health, not much time for, you know, any sort of hobbies. And in my 20s, I learned, I feel like that's where I got really good at doing, really good at learning how to draw, finding a style, finding tools that work for me, and just exploring all different kinds of things. And then the 30s was refining that, because in my 20s, it was a lot of experiment. It was, you know, I was messing with modeling, I was messing with animation, I was messing with comics, I was messing with storyboarding. My 30s was, okay, let's pick one path. You've sort of mastered a bunch of these things. Let's pick one path and let's zero in on getting better with your health, getting better with your family, and putting into practice all of these things. And so it was children's books, getting me into a position where I could leave the animation world and be my own independent illustrator and do children's books, do comics, do freelance, those types of things. And, you know, start SVS, go into that thing. And now what I look at in my 40s, it's like I'm simplifying even more and I'm finding, okay, had a little bit more time for health and stuff outside of family and work. And now in my 40s, I'm planning. My trajectory is hopefully what Will's doing now, and that is stopping work every day early in the afternoon, spending a couple hours doing something, either a hobby or some sort of health-related activity, spending the evenings with family, spending the morning, like just getting stuff done. And
you did miss a lot of drawing at home, though.
Yeah. So I do. Yeah. There is a drawing at home, right? But you're also telling me you're practicing your instrument. You're learning the bass.
Yeah. Hey, we'll get to that stuff in a little bit. Don't get too far ahead of yourself.
Anyways, is that kind of where you wanted to go with that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know where I want to go with all of it, but that's good stuff. I mean, like you're saying, there's different phases that you go through. And I think that was a perfect illustration of that. I guess to wrap up that part is, if you're going to go, you know, it's going to ebb and it's going to flow, like Jake was saying. And just try to plan. I'm trying to give some concrete things that people can do, so it doesn't seem like we're just rambling. If you're going to be entering some phase where you know it's going to be busy, just go ahead and plan on that. Spend time with the family, do whatever you're going to do that's giving you that life balance, in anticipation of, hey, during this month or during this whatever couple of weeks or days, I'm going to be working and it's going to be hard. And just knowing that that's going to happen, don't think that you can maintain that forever. And that shouldn't be what you want to maintain forever. So lean into your free time, and then lean into work when that has to happen. So that's kind of our step one that we're going to give, is work with intensity. And when you're doing one thing, do that thing as full as you can.
I agree.
So
that's good.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty good. I'd like to talk about different ways that we have achieved work-life balance too, aside from working with intensity. I had a couple of things that were important to me, and I'll see how you guys relate to these things. One of the biggest things that has changed over the course of my last 15 years, I'd say, is in terms of trying to balance out my work life balance, is lowering my monthly expenses. I know how that sounds so unsexy compared to all the stuff we just talked about, but lowering your expenses is so much easier than making more money. If you look at how people spend time, a lot of it has to do with earning money. I mean, that's where most people spend most of their day. And so if you have a full-time job and then you got to work that, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day, and then you're going to try to practice illustration outside of that, and then you're going to have a family outside of that, well, there's only so many hours in the day. There's not going to be balance with that. So my first question, and everybody's got a different answer to this, is can you lower something so you don't have to work? Can you turn your full-time job that you have to have into a part-time job that you have to have? Then all of a sudden, you've just freed up half your week to transition to something. And I'm not saying that everybody's situation is going to be able to do that, but if you start investigating it, a couple years back, I was fortunate enough to come across a couple of podcasts, and it's rare that I'm going to recommend things, I guess, so specifically, but Dave Ramsey is one of them. He was just fantastic, and if you guys don't know him, he's a financial kind of planner, I guess, life planner, that really started me thinking about being debt-free. And I'd never really thought, I mean, here in the United States, there's so much credit and so much money thrown at you all the time that you can, they give you enough rope to hang yourself with, if you guys have heard that phrase. We were first searching for a house, I had barely any income, and had not too much of a record. This was in the early, before the big crash. They said I could have like $350,000. That would have destroyed me if I bought a house for $350,000. But they said, here you go, you can have it. And luckily I didn't fall for that trap, but the idea of being debt-free, instead of keeping up with the Joneses and buying all this stuff, Dave Ramsey was the first guy who really started to, here's 8 steps that is going to get you out of debt if you have a big problem with it. And then at the same time I started listening to him, my wife found this website called Mr. Money Mustache, and it's kind of the same thing. Those guys over there are crazy with it. They're like, you know, buy a burrito, cut it in thirds, and then save it. You know, they're penny pinchers to the extreme. But what I love about it is the big focus there is none of us want to work. Like if somebody could just say, hey, I'm going to give you enough money to live the rest of your life, you never have to work again, all of us would say, okay, let's do that. It doesn't mean I'll stop drawing. That's how the guys over there really focus on early retirement. How can I get off this treadmill? So both of those things together started me thinking like, man, is it possible to do that? And so, you know, we just started looking like, where are we spending our money? And some of it was ridiculous. Some of it was easy to cut out just immediately. Fast forward 8-9 years from that point that we started doing this stuff, we're debt free. And that has made a massive difference because I can do what I want to now. I still need some money, but it's just so much different in how I feel about work because it's not as intense.
By debt free, you really mean like full on debt free.
I own my house 100%. We have a renter who pays us net. So now we're actually profiting. So the difference between my last house and this one is almost $3,000 a month in what I had to make. Like before, I was spending about $2,200. Now I don't spend anything, and I get a rent income of about $1,400 a month.
It's crazy. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Lee is one of our inspirations over here at, between Jake and I. So we're trying to catch up to him. But I have a question for you that I've never really asked you before. And if you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to.
Sure.
That I've got you scared. If I'm at home, because I and I've talked about this on my YouTube channel, how we went through our financial meltdown and how we kind of came back out of it and how we're doing great now.
Yep.
When you're in it. And I mean, when you're struggling to know where, I mean, I don't know if I told this on there, but there was a time where I was waiting to be paid from a couple of different jobs, freelance jobs. This was in the, this would have been in the late 90s. And so quite a while ago. And there's no money coming in. And we were dumb with money. And I've talked about this on my YouTube channel. We had to learn some really hard lessons with money, but you know, I thought, well, for sure I'm going to get these checks in the mail. They're going to come in. And they just didn't. And I had been saving my coins and I had to break into a coin jar to put gas in the tank and to go get food at the grocery store. And I thought, well, this will last us another probably week and a half and still no checks. And I had to dip into, I had a big jar of pennies. And I cashed in the pennies at the Coinstar or at the bank, and we got about, it was like $20 worth of pennies. And I stretched that. I shopped like I've never shopped before. It was a bag of potatoes. It was a loaf of bread. It was a gallon of milk. It was, you know what I mean? And and we ended up not driving for, and finally after another week, I got one of those. And I'm calling the clients that I've been working for, like, hey, is that check gone out yet? You know,
anytime.
Yeah. And that was a
frustrating thing.
It was seared into my brain. Like, you're an idiot because you didn't have to go through this pain point. You know, you're doing something wrong. My question to you, Lee, is did you come from money? Cause you're in a really good spot. You're actually in the spot that I would say most people in the world wish they could be in. You're probably in a 1% spot right now.
I had no help, no
that's what
loans,
I wanted to know.
No gifts or anything like that. And as a matter
of
I mean, that would have changed everything. But like my first home loan in Portland, we bought a one bedroom, one bath house, and I did it on a stated income loan. Well, and I had no job. I had no nothing. I mean, it was just like, I kind of said, you know, maybe what I wish I was making to get that loan going.
Yeah.
But that was when it was freewheeling money. Like, we're one of the success stories, I think, of that financial collapse. Like, we were responsible with money. I didn't buy a house that we couldn't afford. We just barely got in under the wire.
Well, I have something to speak to that too. So when I left Blue Sky, I was working for Blue Sky, full-time job, animation industry. It was like the dream job, right? I was making six figures a year, a healthy six figures. And I was like, this is good, but the thing I really want to do is to be independent, work for myself, you know, work out of my home office or whatever, do the projects I want to do. And I knew that in order to do that, my income would drop drastically for years until I could get enough work and enough things going until I was matching what I was doing at Blue Sky. And so me and my wife said, well, we can't live here in Connecticut. We can't live, you know, where these houses are so expensive, where you have to have the six figure income in order to afford this house. So we moved to Utah, to Provo, Utah in 2010. All the housing was like dropping. And we bought, my wife, bless her heart, she saw this house, and I did not have the vision she had, but it was this foreclosed home. The yard was trashed. The inside was bad, you know, bad carpet, bad tile, all that kind of stuff. She's like, this is the house. And we got it for a song. And it's never, our house has never been this huge financial burden for us. It's always been a mortgage we could easily pay every month. And that has made such a huge difference in the amount of work that I have to take on and the amount of like work-life balance that I've been able to do these last 8 years that we've been living in this house.
That's awesome. So, that's awesome. I mean, the again, talking about ebb and flow and where you go with this stuff. I mean, we kind of did the same thing. We bought the house in Portland, the one bedroom house, and that's about right up at the time we started thinking about, is it possible to come debt free? And we had just taken on, again, no down payment on this loan for the house. We just taken on this huge mortgage. And so for us to be talking about being debt free seemed insanely outrageous. Mm-hmm. I mean, we just took on it. That back then it was a, I think, $225,000 loan. And we're like, and I had no income barely, you know, doing a couple of,
this was 2003.
Oh, 2005. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. And so that was just when we started talking about it. But, I've always loved Craftsman bungalow homes. So we bought this home in an area that was slowly transitioning from a dangerous place to being a little bit more gentrified. There's cool restaurants opening up, and then they're right next to buildings that are totally boarded up. And it was in that transition period. And I was like, that's a cool area. And I really dig that house. And so talk about throwing our life out of balance. Like I didn't know how to do any home repair. And I went to Home Depot. I got that orange book that has like basically how to repair everything. And if you know Home Depot, you probably know what I'm talking about. And we came home and I replaced the entire plumbing in the whole house. I replaced all the electrical in the house. I did all the floors. Like we were so out of balance. I'm doing these books in the day. And then at night, I'm remodeling. We knocked down a whole plaster ceiling and redid the ceiling. Geez. I mean, it was a massive remodel.
Did you guys do pottery, where you know your hands were in the pottery or your wife was doing the pottery and then you helped her do the pottery?
What do you mean?
Ghosts. It's a reference to ghosts.
Like, what are you talking
they're fixing
about?
Up Sorry. The apartment.
Oh, okay.
Well, they were demolishing the whole house.
Shortly thereafter, Lee was shot.
These references. But okay, so then that was a one bedroom place, and so we sold that one. The place behind me, I saw somebody moving a couch, and I was like, "What are you doing with this house? You know, why are you getting another couch?" He's like, "No, we're moving out." And so I offered to buy that house with no money. I mean, it was such a dumb thing, but went to the bank. We sold that one bedroom house and made a profit. So Portland we lucked out on where we moved. That area was getting better and we bought another house. But that's when we really kicked into gear. Now that we got even a higher mortgage, we're like, I really want to be debt free. And my friends around me are saying, you are insane. There's no way to be debt free. But I was like a broken record back then. And my wife's grandparents had passed away and they had this home in, it was about an hour outside of Portland and it was all beat up. And I saw that home and I was like, what's going on with that? And they're like, it's just, you know, it's a beat up home. There's nobody living there. I was like, what if we live there for free in exchange for helping maintain that home and fix it back up? We'll go live there. And we're getting ready to have our son. And so I'll fix that house up in exchange for living there for free. And then we'll rent our house out, which will pay for the mortgage. And so we did that for 3 years. And that was the first taste I got where my mortgage was paid by a renter. And we're living rent free. And it was so ideal, even though I had to work on it. I mean, there's a couple of funny stories there that one time I came home and my cat was on the side. He was by the corner of the house and he was, you know, that classic pose that hunting dogs take when they, you know, it's a cartoon. I don't know if that happens in reality, but they're pointing, but my cat was in that kind of pose. And we're not country people. That's one thing we found out too. And so my cat was in that pose and I was like, what is the cat doing? I've never seen the cat do that. And I'll walk around the corner and there's a bear standing there.
Oh, wow.
Oh my gosh.
Huge, in Portland. Huge big bear. Yeah. So, I mean, we're in the country at this point. I grabbed the cat. I moved the cat out of the way. And then I'm like, why am I messing with the cat? There's this bear right here. I should just run inside. but we didn't like living out in the country.
Lover of animals.
And so once we got the idea of renting our house out, and I don't want to go into this whole thing. I don't know. I'm probably going too deep in this, but
3-point perspective, the podcast about illustration, real estate.
My point of the whole thing is,
and how to make,
once we had rented out a house,
real estate work for
once
you.
Once we had rented out our house, we got the idea that it's possible to rent out your house. So anytime we go on vacation after that, we would rent our house out Airbnb. And the point I'm making, again, not to get too detailed with housing stuff, but we started making these huge sacrifices and these huge strides to living debt free. And you know, and those are some of the things that we did. We suffered at. We did not like living in the country, but we did it because it worked for our situation and it had moved us towards that goal. And renting our house out Airbnb was a lot of effort to get it ready to do that and figure out how to do that. And but it moved us closer to our goal. And then ultimately, I'll wrap this up with a bow. We had to move from Portland. If you are an artist and you're living in an expensive city, you are not going to be able to get debt free. There's just no possible way around that. Unless you're independently wealthy or there's some other money stream. We moved from Portland, which is expensive, to Nashville, which is not super cheap, but it's definitely cheaper than Portland. And that was that move was a 5-year plan.
And that allowed you to buy your house and the rental property in back.
Correct. But I spent 5 years. The third house we bought in Portland was a 5-year remodel, getting it ready. It was in the same shape as the first one. I did 12 years of remodeling and I hated it. I was so out of balance because of it and exhausted from it, but it set the stage for this final move. And so it was a long-term plan. Ultimately, going back to my point, which was lowering your expenses takes effort. It takes some time. You may have to move. You may have to shift stuff around. You may have to lower your standard of living. You may have to get roommates, but whatever it is, if you lower how much you have to make, your time will expand.
Okay. So step one was, what was step one again?
Go to Lee? Dave Ramsey's website. I don't know what's the
No. No, that we talked
step
about.
Step one was work with it's okay to work with intensity.
Yeah. Work with intensity. Step two is lower your expenses. What's step three?
Step three is for Enjoy. Me is well, do you guys agree? Do you guys want to add anything to that last
I want to add this, that you how do you feel today about having to take a job versus how you felt 20 years ago? 15, 20 years ago.
What do you mean?
So you get an email from a client and the job is, I know, I've got you.
I just got your dog.
No, I don't.
Walter joined us today.
Hey, Pupper.
I mean, the whole beginning of my illustration career, I took everything that came in because we were spending everything we made. We were dumb with our money. And because I needed so much money, I didn't have a choice. When a job came in, I took it. And there were a lot of jobs that I took that I hated, that I didn't want to do. So I'm asking you, like, how do you look at when a job comes in now, you don't have a house payment. You're getting all your bills paid by your renter.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I can't say this on the air, but me and my wife joke about it as having FU money. I love that part of it because I take jobs now that move me emotionally and creatively.
Yeah.
I don't take jobs for the money now, which is vastly different. Again, you're going to go through different stages of your career. In the beginning, I take everything, not just for the money, but I need to be published. That's one of the main things. You got to have some credibility of working as a pro and meeting art directors and all that stuff. And you got to go through that grind. But again, like Will said, as you get better technically, the job gets more rewarding as you go farther in your career and you don't have to take those jobs that don't match up with what you're doing, what you want to do, it gets more rewarding as well. So this is a career that just becomes more and more rewarding as I go through it. I don't know if you guys feel that way too.
No, I think the thing, the lesson to learn here too as well is you're you know, if you're in a position where you have to provide for a family or even just providing for yourself, like it doesn't really matter where your money comes from. Like art can be the way that you make money, but if you got a side hustle, Airbnb in your house out, you know, like that is just a legitimate way to provide for yourself and to get out of debt as taking on 3 extra illustration jobs. And so I think sometimes for me as an artist, like all through, you know, my 20s and 30s, I'm like, it has to be art. That's the only thing I'm good at. That's what I have to do to make money. And now I'm like, that's sort of shifted where it's like, well, you know, it doesn't have to be that. It could be, I help my wife start a business. It could be, you know, that I do get a rental property or something like that, or we do Airbnb something, or we flip, you know, a car or something like that, you know?
Right.
So at some point, you got to think, do what you got to do to make money. whether it's art or something else, but leave some portion of making art, the craft of it, for yourself so that you can enjoy it and you can get something out of it than just, you know, doing it for the bills to pay
for
bills.
Sure. That's great. A little segue to my next thing, my next tip, which is be a scheduler. I often joke with Jake about his lists and things like that, but truly I respect it because he's, you know, it goes along with working with intensity. Is if you don't know what you're supposed to be doing, how are you supposed to work with intensity? And Jake's really, really good about saying, hey, from 8 to noon, I'm going to be doing this thing. And from, you know, 3 to 4, I'm going to be doing this thing. And everybody has to get a handle on that. There's a different techniques. For me, I work about eight hours a day ish, and I work in 50-minute blocks. And when I'm in that 50-minute block, I work. I mean, it is
15 just work, or, like we were talking. 15 or 50.
50. So okay. I take 10 minutes off, and this has to do with health, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But in those 10 minutes that I have in between those work blocks, I stand up and I'll walk around. I mean, illustrators are the most unhealthy bunch because when we get focused, we can sit there for like 5 hours and not move. Our legs are stationary. We're just stationary. It's just so bad for you. So I get up, I move around, I have a little...
Can I just throw in one little thing with that as far as taking care of your health? One thing that made a huge difference. So as an illustrator, a lot of times your posture like can be really bad because you're leaning over, you're in a weird chair situation. I actually switched to a stool. So I've been sitting on a stool for the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. And what that does is sort of forces me to arch my back, not arch my back the wrong way, but to kind of stand up, sit up straight. And that just allows me to not have as much back pain while I'm working.
It's a good side note on that same note. I have like this, it almost looks like a climbing harness or something, but it basically is a device that kind of pulls your shoulders back. Like Jake said, the natural position for drawing is rolling your shoulders forward. If you do that enough, the chest muscles on the front end, the front side, contract, they get shorter, and the muscles on the back of your arm get longer, and pretty soon that's your normal state. Like it's hard to actually get out of that state because your body has adjusted to it. So I have this anyway, it's important to think about
this
the health.
Is the podcast brought to you by the AARP.
Oh god,
we talk about geriatric concerns.
What I love about the stuff we're talking about today is it's all long-term strategies. It's not just like one thing. It's hey, we're doing this for life, let's figure out how to do it.
Right.
So be a scheduler. That, you know, working 8 hour blocks at 50 minutes a pop is how I figured out how to do it. It's not the only way to do it. Do you guys agree with that? That you need to be good at, you need to take time to actually look at your calendar and figure out what you're doing.
This has been huge for me. Because when I started working for myself, I'd get done with the day and be like, I have nothing to show for this day, but I've been in the studio for 8 hours or 9 hours. And I'm like, I don't know what I did. So I started doing a time audit where every minute of the day was accounted for. Like, okay, the last half hour, I confess, I cruised Twitter, you know, I surfed Twitter. But then the half hour after that, I actually buckled down and got this illustration done. And then for these 3 hours, I was doing this. And for this 2 hours, I spent on email, you know, clearing out my inbox. And I did that for months where I was just recording the time that I was spending and making to-do lists and checking things off just so I knew I could look at that list and say, oh, I did do this, 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 and this. Once I had that time audit and I could see how much time was spent where, I could then whittle out stuff that was unproductive. So I could see like, oh, my hours where I used to think that like, oh, I get so much work done at night after the kids go to bed. And that used to be the case because I had a lot more energy. Now I'm a little bit older. I get tired. I realized 3 hours spent at night, I only get the same amount of work done that in the morning I can get done in like an hour and a half. So I'm half as, you know, 50% less productive at night. So what I decided was, let's take the time where I'm most productive and put my most creative work into those hours. Let's take the time where I'm least productive, and that's when I surf Twitter, and that's when I watch YouTube videos, and that's when I read a book or watch a movie or something like that. That way I'm not doing unproductive stuff during productive time, and that has just made a huge difference in how I do my schedule. So the other thing with that too is now I don't want to like stay up late watching YouTube videos. So I end up going to bed earlier. And then I wake up earlier and I'm getting more work done before the kids get up in the morning. And it's just an overall like refining of my schedule and how I work. So yeah, I definitely agree with that one.
That's awesome. Will, what do you think?
I think you guys are boring with your scheduling.
Oh, come on. I scheduled time for you to say that.
Yep, right on schedule, Will.
No, I'm with you guys. I'm not as much of a, I don't write down my time. I kind of know what I have to get done, and I think about it a lot beforehand. You've got that skeptical look on your face, Lee.
The whole thing that I've learned about being a scheduler and being proactive at it, I used to be, I think, in Will's camp, is that once you write it down, then it actually, you don't think about it. And that's been a beautiful change. It's just done.
I have a to-do list, but I don't put a time stamp on those things because I don't want to waste the time that you guys waste in trying to figure out how long each one of them will take.
Nice. Well, that's actually a good segue into part of being a schedule. Go ahead.
Before that, I just want to comment on what I see Will Terry do, because I'm watching you, Will. And here's what he does.
I'm
this is a compliment, okay, by the way. I'm not setting you up. Will does have a to-do list, and he comes into work, and you ever hear of the MIT? It stands for the most important task. I think that's Will's like gospel. So he comes in, what's the most important thing I got to do today? I'm going to knock that out. And anything outside of that is just gravy. And
that's huge. That's awesome.
Then I'm just going to go home. And so that's what I see him do. Sometimes he'll just be like, okay, I got the thing done that I need to get done today. See ya. I'm out of here. And I love it.
That's a great point.
I wish I had that kind of discipline.
That's good. That's really good.
And part of mine though is also, I don't like, so I love being in here, but then I get tired of being in here, and it's not because of you, Jake.
Yeah.
It's just sitting at a desk. So I like to break up my work day, and because my kids are grown, I do a lot of drawing at home later on. So I actually break my day into thirds, which is the morning / afternoon work, and then the afternoon exercise / shopping for the family and doing things with them. And then at night, many nights I'll just draw and get work done. So I'll take a lot of work home. My freelance work I do, usually I'll do that, the drawings part of it, at home. So you never get the benefit of seeing me actually sit here drawing, because I just feel like I can do that anywhere on my iPad. And the,
right.
And so that's really made things a lot better. But yeah, so
no, that's a great point. I'd love to hear. One thing I love about what Will's saying there is he found a schedule that really worked for him. He identified, you know, what wasn't working in an 8-hour work day that typically like, oh, I'm at work or I'm at home. And he kind of mixed it up and made it work for him. And I think everybody should really put a priority on that some people are more alert at night and more creative. Some people are really, I'm a morning person. Jake, I'd love to hear how you, just on average, how your day breaks up.
On average, it's up between 4:30 and 5. I get an hour of work in before 6. Wow. 6 o'clock is when the kids get up, and I've got kids that go to school by 7:30. So I usually, 3 days out of the week, I'll make breakfast, and then Allison does breakfast the other 2 days. But she has a workout class that she goes to, so I'm sort of holding it down. But between 6 and 9:30 or 10, it's make breakfast, kind of do some house chore stuff, and then do my workout. So I'll do a run that takes anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. And then I shower and commute into the studio. And then from 9:30 or 10 until 12:30 or 1 is straight creative time. That's when I do my most, you know, cognitively demanding work. And same with the early morning hours too. Some really creative time. The afternoons I tend to carve out for stuff like this podcast. I really don't like that we're doing it in the morning.
Sorry.
I'm getting some work done while we're talking. I'm actually getting some headway on this project. Yep. Anyways, the afternoon is all administrative stuff. So checking email, cleaning out that inbox. I practice the inbox zero method, which is super helpful. And you guys can look that up, see what that is.
We'll link to it, maybe.
Yeah, there we go. That's a good idea. Phone calls, meetings, podcasts, interviews, anything like that happens at the afternoon. I cut out about 5:30, and then from 6 until 7:30 or 8 is family time, dinner, spending time with kids, helping with school projects or whatever. And then I spend an hour at night just decompressing. I've been reading a lot lately, so I'm got my nose in like 2 or 3 books, and I just kind of go bounce back between them all and take notes on the books, and maybe write a little bit for whatever comic project I want to do, and then I'm out, and I try to get 7 hours of sleep at night.
Excellent. I mean, you guys should also take note of that. I mean, look how it was so easy. I said, tell me your schedule. And he goes right into it. So it's something that he's thought about. Yeah. It's not just like random, like, oh, I don't know what I do.
Well, I'll add one more thing to that too. So that's my work week. The weekend, because I'm so focused during the work week, my weekend is so unfocused. So Saturday, I sleep in. Friday night, I stay up late and watch a movie with one of my kids. Saturday, I sleep in. I'll go on a run, a nice long run in the morning. The afternoon, it's chores, it's house stuff, mowing the lawn or whatever. Sundays is completely day of rest. I go to church. I spend time with my family. We'll do board games. We'll make a dessert or whatever. We'll watch, a Miyazaki film or something, And I completely unplug. I try not to even look at my phone on Sundays and just not even like worry about anything. And then by the time Sunday night rolls around, I am so like itching to get back to work.
Nice.
That it's like no big deal waking up at 4:30 Monday morning and just hitting it hard.
That's great. Before I go into my schedule, I know everybody's on pins and needles waiting to see what I do. Should tell you guys that who's this podcast brought to you by? Do we want to do our midpoint commercial?
Who is it brought to us by? It's
brought to us by svslearn.com, the place to go.
Yeah, Will, tell us about
svslearn.com. I'm glad you asked. Is an online children's illustration school. We have a lot of tutorials. We have a lot of small, short classes. We have some longer classes, and they're all kind of Netflix style subscription. However, you can also, from time to time, get into an interactive class where you get feedback from a teacher. Sometimes it's us. Sometimes it's other teachers that we've partnered with. And it's a project that we love working on. It's been so rewarding and so much fun. And we have some big plans for the next year to 2 years.
I'll tease with some of those plans that we're talking about doing some live events. I don't want to get too detailed on that because we don't have any details, but we are talking about it.
I did a few last year, which was cool. They're sort of like our test run,
and they all sold out, and they were well received, and it was amazing. So we do want to do that and hopefully come to a city near you in the near future. Workday is I tried to be like Jake, where I would wake up really early, and I'm a naturally early riser. I try to wake up and go straight to work, and I found that I was just meeting some resistance there. And I think one of the things I want to push to you guys is really feeling some of this stuff, and if you're bumping up against some resistance just internally, to try to change it. Like I'd wake up and I'd try to go to sit down at my desk, and I was just antsy. I had too much energy to just sit there and start working. Especially when my office was at home. I couldn't just stumble from my bedroom into the studio and start work. And so mornings for me is I wake up about 5:30, and that is going to be intense workout. I work out with weights. I go running. That is the first thing I do is athletic, always. And I typically spend about an hour to hour and a half doing that. And it found once I got on that schedule, it was perfect for me. I come back into the office or at home, wherever I'm going to be that day, and I'm balanced, and I've burned through some of that weird energy, and I'm ready to sit down and work because I've already gotten some exercise. And so that just was right spot on for me.
You like that? Those squirrels early in the morning, they're like, okay, I'm out. I'm running around. I'm grabbing nuts. You got to get all that energy out first.
I guess I do kind of act like a squirrel. Too much energy, and I just get bored. I got sleepy when I tried to just work coming out of bed, even though I am a morning person. So I exercise first, and then depending on which day it is, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I've designated for being a professional illustrator. That's when I do my book work. I have a separate studio that's away from the home. And on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I work there for between 8 and 10 hours. And that's where I do the 50-minute blocks, and I'm just focused on illustration. I don't answer the phone. It's a very focused time frame for me. And then Tuesday, Thursday, I've set up for teaching and SVS business and recording these podcasts, even though it's a Wednesday today, so you guys are throwing me off my schedule.
A Wednesday morning. This is unorthodox. Yeah. Should be a Tuesday
Everything
afternoon.
Everything is screwed now for my schedule, but you know, you just got to roll. You got to roll with it. Which I'll go over in a second. Actually,
before you do though, would you just self describe yourself as a workaholic?
Naturally, yes. My wife jokes. I can never do anything halfway. That's a better way versus workaholic. I just get intensely interested in things, and to the point where I don't like being a beginner in things. I will strive to be an expert, whether we're taking like a scuba diving lesson and I like want to be better than everyone at scuba diving, like for no reason. I'm just like hyper competitive.
Were you better than your twin at everything?
He is stronger than me. He's always worked out and stuff. So just with lifting weights or something like that, he's stronger. But anytime there's technique involved, like we used to race bikes as kids, I would win just because I'm insane about that stuff. I like competing, not necessarily because I like winning, but I just really I geek out on technique of things.
Yeah. It's just crazy to me that there's two Lee Whites in the world.
I have a twin brother, but there's not, because he's so different than me. He's quieter than me. He doesn't do anything artistic. He's a firefighter. He doesn't do our art.
My friend, his little brothers, two little brothers are twins, and he'd always joke around. This is my high school buddy. He's like, "What's it like, you know, having to share a soul with someone else?" Like, I'm going to be split between two bodies.
Well, me and my brother are
like, shut up.
We're fraternal. And so it's never been, you know, we've never been too on the same page. Like when we raced bikes for a little while, that was like our common ground when we were kids. But then I got into skateboards and was competitive with that. And so I just get intensely interested in stuff. I'm not a workaholic. I like to do stuff. And I've always been that way. I can geek out on anything I'm into. Where I wanted to go a second ago with being a scheduler, and one of the things that would trip me up a lot when I would build my schedules is I would schedule, and Jake, I'd love to hear if you do this too. When I would get out my calendar and start scheduling, I would basically schedule the perfect day. Like from 8 to noon, I'm working on the book. And then from noon, you know, I'm doing this editorial illustration. And everything was perfectly lined up. There wasn't a moment wasted. And I was going to be like the epitome of productivity. And then something, I'd get a revision or some other unexpected thing, and the whole thing would come crashing down because the schedule's off now. And so after a number of frustrating years trying to figure out how to deal with that, I finally realized it's so easy. Don't be idealistic. Leave open space in between the projects. And all of a sudden, things started working out a lot more smoothly. Now, and you do have to obviously account for some things that you don't expect. But just by not trying to schedule a perfect day enabled me to have perfect days, if that makes sense.
Yeah. That's right. Don't get frustrated if your schedule gets thrown out of whack. But I like knowing what a schedule should be, so that if things are going off track and it's my fault, I can get back on track, and I just have like an armature to hang everything on,
right?
You know? But be willing to, you know, dodge and weave as needed.
Yeah, use the calendar almost like you said as a guide or an armature, and not as a hard line thing, because you'll never stick to it. Things take longer, things are shorter. So that's an important concept though, because before I would just derail myself, and then I felt like, and then I'd go from having like a crazy scheduled day to no schedule and nothing else would get done.
Yeah. Yep. Those days where you're like, oh shoot, what do I do with myself?
But I agree with Jake. On the weekends, I have nothing scheduled, which I guess we can transition into one of this podcast. I don't want to go too long, but do we want to talk at all about our lives outside of work? That was kind of where we were going originally with this whole thing. Is that okay? So we've achieved some kind of life balance. What do you guys do with your off time for the most part?
Well, I have specific thing I wanted to say about that. And this would be, I guess, point five.
We're still on four.
Let's just run through the points. Oh, we're still on four.
So work with intensity and focus in all categories of your life. Lower your monthly expenses.
Set a schedule.
Be a scheduler. And then that's where we are now.
Number four is, I think in order to be a good illustrator, it's not about your craft, it's not about your technique, it's about your experiences that you're trying to share with people. It's what are you creating art about? And you can't do that if you're vapid, if you don't have anything inside of you. And so you got to have experiences, you got to have a life outside of the studio, you got to have hobbies, something like that, something that you can, like, you know, once you get through that initial stage in life where it's the intensity to like master your craft and to get there. Once you're sort of on this track where you've set a schedule and you've got, you know, some room in there for balance, what are you going to do with the rest of it? And that tells you a lot about, I think that informs your art. And maybe even up and before then, you figure out a way that you can do stuff. You can travel, you can, even by traveling, I don't mean go to Europe. It's expensive. I mean, go to the other side of your town and visit that museum that you keep thinking about visiting, you know, stuff like that. Because that's going to, I talk about it all the time. It's filling your creative bank account. You need to collect creative capital in order to use it, to know what to create art about.
But, no, that's great. That's fantastic. So is that what you do with your time? Is you travel, or, I mean, you know, plan day trips and family time. What do you do outside of work?
So me specifically, what I do, we do a month long family vacation every summer, where, I mean, 2 weeks to a month, sometimes it depends on the schedule, but we'll do a road trip, or we'll go across country to New York and visit family out there. And it's just time where the kids, you know, don't have access to computers. Really, they're in a tiny little beach house sleeping on top of each other. And really, it's time for us to just have experiences and focus on family and just having fun, you know, playing actual, like, cornhole, you know, actual games that don't involve buttons and screens, you know. So there's that. Day to day, though, I raise chickens. So for the last 8 years, I've had chickens. And that's been really interesting and kind of a fun thing to do. But it definitely is a problem to solve.
You guys say, when we hung out this past summer, when we were traveling cross country, seeing Jake, there's one ornery chicken that Jake had that kept flying the coop, and seeing Jake try to chase that chicken down was one of the highlights of my summer.
I'm glad. I got rid of that chicken.
Dinner time. Will, what do you like to do?
I mean, I do a lot of things, and I think the benefit for this, for the people listening to this, I think a lot of people are probably in that position where they're in transition from maybe school, and maybe their finances aren't to where yours are, or where mine are, or where Jake's are. And I remember not being able to do much, but I could always find time to exercise. But my variety of exercise was a lot. It was like, I would run. That was my thing back then, right after school, I was into running, and that was about all I had time for. Now, we fly model airplanes. Like we mentioned before, I play the bass. I go hiking. I go mountain biking. I play racquetball 3 days a week.
And that's quite a list.
Yeah. And snowboarding in there sometimes. And so it's like, to me, one of the main ideas of this podcast is, if you can really get your, if you can work really hard in the beginning, and you, I think you have more bandwidth for working earlier than you do later. I think you're, I think you, I mean, you just don't see too many 80-year-olds that are just crushing it with, you know, the nine, you know, the 9 a.m. till they drop at night on work. And so, but you can do that when you're in your 20s and 30s and even 40s. I think when you start, I guess I'm saying I'm giving myself a pass on working that hard now.
Nice.
My early disclaimer. 50s. But what you do isn't as important as the fact that you are making time to do other things. And I see a lot of my illustrations. I can see, you know, I'm wrapping up on my Bonaparte book right now. And I see a lot of my childhood experiences in here. I played T-ball, and this book that I'm working on right now is, you know, Bonaparte Plays Ball. It's about baseball. And I put in so many things into this book from experience. Right. And if you're not having those experiences, and I think gameplay, I'm going to go back to gameplay again. I think gameplay definitely gives you good experiences. It gives you certain skills like multitasking on the RPG that I was playing. It was, you're doing like 5 things or 10 things at the same time. You're managing things. And I actually make an argument that that helps, that you can, it helps you do things in your life where you're multitasking. Sure. But as far as the raw experiences, I think you need to make time to do those things. And gosh, I mean, if I had it to do over again, one of the things that I would do is I would spend money differently in the beginning. I would become more financially independent earlier on, and I would have cut out probably half the work that I did, because it diluted. I did so much horrible work just because I had to get, you know, and when I say that, I mean like jobs that were so heavily art directed that I wasn't happy with the results, and I'm pretty sure the client was just like, "Eh, it is what it is." But it wasn't, it, you know, it's long forgotten. It doesn't exist on this planet basically anymore. It was in a magazine or in an advertisement that's meaningless. Not that those markets are meaningless, and not that you can't find a lot of joy in doing them, but I didn't. It wasn't for me.
Right. Interesting.
I want to add too, like, us three are sort of in this later time period of our career where we've all been doing it for 20 years or more, you know? And so don't get frustrated if you're like, I'm never going to get there. I thought I would never get to where I'm at right now. There was time in my life where I'm like, is this,
I can still possible? Remember, but a boss of mine at the University of Maryland, where I was working as a graphic designer, and it was not a graphic design position so much as it was, they hired students to do graphic design. So it wasn't a professional position. But it was an awesome job. And I remember my boss saying, you're going to make it. You're going to do this. And I, in my mind, I was like, you're just saying that. There's no way that this is going to be a career. I remember thinking that for years. Like, who am I kidding? And, you know, it is amazing to be able to do this. And we talk about that sometimes when we come in here. And it's like, we roll in when we want. There's nobody. Like, Jake and I will joke, like, oh, you're getting here a little late today, huh? You're sleeping in a little bit, Jake, huh? You know, or
I mean, it sounds lazy. That sounds lazy though. But if you look at the work that we're all putting out, it's still a ton of work each year that gets done.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't want to make it sound like we're just like,
but you know, here's whatever. The difference, and you touched on this before, Lee, is the difference is we're working smart, not hard. So we're not spending time spinning our wheels. We're thinking about it. We're having meetings. We're talking about it. And then the execution is really quick because we've spent all that time making all those mistakes before. And the analogy I love to use is this, the guy that used to live across the street from me, who I'd go and help him move a couch, and I'd go in and I'd see, oh, he's prepped the whole house. There's stuff that's moved out of the way so we don't trip. He's got a belt tied around the hide-a-bed so that when we turn it on its side, the hide-a-bed doesn't slam out and put a ding in his wall. You know, he's done all this prep work so that when he comes and asks me to help him move something with a couple other guys, we just move it and we're done. It's not a lot of mistakes made. And art is a lot the same way. When you figure out your process, you just sit down and crank something out and it just works out. because you're it's all the mistakes you're avoiding.
I mean, you saw how fast I did those two character designs yesterday, Will. You know, 3 hours to do it when, you know, 10 years ago it would be a 10-hour job. But I've got a system down. I know how I'm working.
And your intuition is finely tuned, too. You don't you know when you're on the right track or not really.
So the sad thing for a student is if you're working 10 hours on a project, don't pat yourself on the back because you really worked three good hours. Right.
That's true. That's a good way to look at it. Yeah. My 10 hours, you know, 10 years ago was a three hour project now.
I'd like to talk. So I've got a ton of interest and I'm not going to go into all that stuff. What I wanted to highlight though, is how a couple of these things, like Jake was saying, illustration's about experiences and how do some of these experiences that aside from on the outside of illustration, how do they affect illustration? One of the big, driving forces of who I am today was what I did as a late teen, early 20s, a competitive skateboarder. Just because I came through a very important time in my life, you know, as you're going from a 14 years old to 21, a lot of things change, obviously, at that time, and skateboarding was the one constant. And from that time period, how I saw the world was shaped through skateboarding. Like even now, anytime I'm going downstairs and then there's a handrail, I only see that. I see it first as an obstacle and then second as a handrail. And it's the whole world is like that. If there's anything, if there's any slant in a building or anything, the first thing I think about is how I would skate it. And it's really weird. I mean, but I realize this as I go through life with other people who didn't have that experience. Like my wife never thinks like, oh, this would be a good handrail to grind down. She never thinks that. But how that affected my life in illustration is skateboarding to me was all about finding all these lines in these urban environments, in these skate parks and these pools. And it became a tool that I use for composition now in illustration. I mean, it's not a one-to-one direct thing, mm-hmm. but I think the way that I compose a picture has to do with the lines that I used to see as a skateboarder. And then fast forward to now, I play professional disc golf. I'm a tournament level player. And the reason I play disc golf, it sounds so corny, but regular golf is like this too. It's not just a straight shot. Yeah, ball golf. You can go, you know, the ball can hook from left to right or right to left or straight, you know, with a forward spin or backspin. And same is true with disc golf. And so it's again, all about these lines of throwing through the woods and you got to go around that tree. And so how is it going to, you know, what all these shapes in disc golf kind of mirror how I think about illustration. And so it's just one thing, each thing that I do, and I try to see how that's going to complement what the other things that I do, not just everything to illustration, but how does illustration change how I do those things, you know, skateboarding and disc golf and all this stuff. And, you know, going back to the idea of working with intensity, like I was in the gym this morning and lifting weights and there's a guy who after every time he would do a set, he would just be on his phone. And I was thinking, I would think to myself, that guy's not working with any intensity. You know, also all this stuff kind of plays off each other and each thing makes the other thing better, in my opinion. Or that's why I'll try to think about mm-hmm. it. So anyway, I try to see links between things.
That's cool. I like that. I got a quote that we could finish this out with. Or
let's do the quote after our wrap up ad from who's this podcast brought to us by?
I think it's in my turn to talk about that.
People are going to get sick of it. We have to do this. Our bosses.
SVSlurred.com. Go check it out. We've talked about it twice now in this podcast. But basically, I think it's $25, $24.99 a month for a subscription. And you get access to hundreds of hours of tutorials with assignments, with just top quality like video teaching from everything from you know light and shadow if you're struggling with how to draw shadows, how to add light to your drawings and illustrations to I mean we have a 20-hour course on children's books with interviews with art directors and editors and in that course I make a book dummy for a children's book. And you, so you could see that from start to finish, how that happens too. So I would check it out. And to wrap it up, I want to say, I don't have a quote. I have 100 quotes. I can't pick one.
Come on, you got to pick one. You've already teased it out. How about this one? We got to have a quote.
How about this one? Make a daily appointment to disconnect from the world so that you can connect with yourself.
I love that.
And yeah, I think that's what this work-life balance is about. Disconnect from the world so you can connect with yourself, so that when you're back to connecting with your work, with your world, you know what to work on and what to talk about and what your work is to be about.
Cool.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. This is 3-Point Perspective. It's made possible by SVS Learn. You've become a great illustrator. I'm finding my notes. No. Here they are. Your hosts have been Will Terry. You can find his work at willterry.com. On Instagram, it's Will Terry Art. Lee White. His work is found online at leewhiteillustration.com, and go follow him on Instagram at leewhiteillo. I'm Jake Parker. My work can be found online at mrjakeparker.com, and my Instagram account is at Jake Parker. Podcast edited by Alex Sugg. You can find his work, or if you want to work with them, it's alexsugg.com. Show notes by Tanner Garlick, and Tanner also does an illustration for each episode as well, and you can see those on svslearn.com on the podcast link. But find more Tanner's work at tannergarlickart.com. So if you like this episode, please share it around. That'd be great. We podcasts live and die by word of mouth of others. So we'd love for you guys to share it and tell your artist friends about it.
And one last thing, if you are watching on YouTube, we have how many episodes that we've already recorded on that you can get on iTunes?
Oh yeah, this is like episode 27. Yeah.
So we're just starting to put them on YouTube, and
we'll start putting the backlog on YouTube as well. So if you want to join in on this discussion, you've got some thoughts about work-life balance, we have a thread in the svslearn.com forums, so you can join in the discussion there and tell us what you think. The forums are free to join. It's a great community there. Share your artwork as well and give critiques on people's artwork. It's good stuff happening there. All right, that's it. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you next time.